Welcome to AgriPulse Newsmakers, where we aim to take you to the heart of ag policy. I'm your host, Lydia Johnson. This week, we're joined by USDA Undersecretary for Food Safety, Mindy Brashears, as well as Western Growers President and CEO, Dave Puglia. But first, New World screwworm has been detected in the United States. The pest is a highly destructive, flesh-eating parasitic fly that lays eggs in the open wounds of warm-blooded animals, including livestock, wildlife, pets, and rarely, humans. It can be fatal if left untreated. Federal and state officials are racing to contain new cases, but are constrained by limited supplies of sterile flies, the primary tool for fighting the pest. The U.S. is expected to expand sterile fly production as new facilities come online in the next few years. In the meantime, though, officials are developing methods to maximize production of male sterile flies. Economists say the screwworm's arrival in the U.S. will likely have limited impacts on broader beef markets, but warn that ranchers in affected areas could see higher time and financial costs tied to surveillance and treatment. Mindy Brashears serves as USDA Undersecretary for Food Safety. She says New World screwworm does not pose a risk to the nation's food supply.
Well, I mean, obviously New World screwworm is a serious animal health risk, and we're concerned about it. We have all of USDA effort to really address this with urgency, partnering with our state animal health partners. But I want to say it is not a food safety issue. And as a matter of fact, the New World screwworm only really thrives on healthy living tissue. So you're not going to find it poultry or meat or anything that you find in the supermarket.
Yeah, and there's been a lot of concern and misinformation online. I mean, what are some of the biggest misconceptions that you're seeing or hearing, and what's the truth that those readers and listeners, especially a lot of our viewers that are farmers and ranchers, that they should know?
Well, one of the things I saw on social media this morning was that there was a concern that there could be worms in your meat. Yeah, so that's absolutely not true. You're not going to see that in the meat. But also, one of the things I really want to address is the USDA response to New World screwworm. There's been a lot of misinformation about budget cuts and all of those things impacting our response to New World screwworm. We've been preparing for this at USDA since day one, since January of 2025. We have invested in research. We've invested in putting people in place with expertise to be able to work on the containment, the identification, all of those things. Invested in the Panama facility and bringing in sterile flies, rebuilding the facility in Mexico. So, and we just opened a new facility, had ribbon cutting a few days ago down in Texas, where we'll have our own sterile flies facility. So there's been substantial investment. We knew that it would eventually get to the U.S., but we slowed it down substantially, and now we're doing everything we can to mitigate it and push it back.
Yeah, and in your role, you oversee USDA's Food Safety and Inspection Service, and there's over 7,000 inspectors all across the country, ensuring that, you know, all of the meat, the protein, all those products are safe for the public to consume. But can you tell us a bit about what that preparation has looked like for those folks to make sure that the food supply chain stays safe through this?
Yes, absolutely. Well, our partners over at APHIS, they're leading the animal health charge, and we just want to give them a big shout out for doing a great job. Our federal inspectors are in the plants every day, and they will inspect every animal that comes into a facility. And they've been trained to look for the signs to see if they see any signs of the New World screwworm. If they do, then it's not going to meet our antemortem inspection. They know what to do with that animal, even if they find it after the animal is harvested, how to take care of any lesions, to make sure that it doesn't spread, to contain that. So they are very trained in that. And then even after the fact, we have inspection of the carcasses and all of the parts of the animals. So we make sure that our food supply, when it reaches the consumer, is safe. And shout out to our inspectors at the science for doing that in a strong role and making sure that we are controlling this and that.
We'll be back with more Newsmakers right after this.
As a cooperative, our customers are our owners. They share our profits and help guide our business. We're not just another lender. We're Farm Credit, and we're here for you.
Some of sustainability to farmers just comes second nature. If you yes. asked a farmer, are you sustainable? They'd probably look at you maybe a little funny and say, I don't think I'm doing anything that special, but it really is just what they do. We're all farmers, and our goal is taking the best care of our land, our cattle, our natural resources.
This
is my sustainability story.
Welcome back. Western Growers President and CEO Dave Puglia testified before the House Ag Committee on the future of the U.S.-Mexico-Canada trade agreement. We asked him about the message he shared with lawmakers.
Yeah, we fundamentally believe that USMCA should be renewed. It has worked well establishing tariff-free trade among the three North American countries for, I think, for all of agriculture, but certainly for the specialty crop industry. But it doesn't mean that it should be renewed without any change. We now have experience under our belt with USMCA. We think there are some changes, some improvements that should be made to the agreement in the negotiations that would help level the playing field a bit, especially with respect to our Mexican partners. And those go to things like labor compliance and food safety. Particularly, there's some other issues we've called out as well. But there are definitely some things that the U.S. Trade Representative can negotiate into the agreement that would help the cost of production imbalance that we have, especially with California producers, West Coast producers, and their counterparts in Mexico.
Yeah, some U.S. producers have already been caught up in tensions with countries like Canada. I mean, what are you hearing from your growers that are on the ground dealing with that?
Well, it's interesting. Canada, after the President imposed the IEPA tariffs last year. Canada slapped retaliatory tariffs on a number of our products, ag products, including several specialty crops, table grapes, melons, pecans, a few other things, and in violation of the USMCA, actually. And that led to a quick depression in sales, obviously, of those products into Canada. Canada is far and away the number one export destination for specialty crops in the United States. It's not all that close. Mexico is number two. So when Canada slapped those retaliatory tariffs on, that had an immediate impact. We lost market share in things like citrus and grapes and a few other categories to Morocco and Mexico and some South American countries. But more than that, what we've seen is a lingering depression of consumer demand for American produce in Canada. That is being reflected in the retailers' conversations with my members and the just sheer depression in orders that used to be historically pretty reliable. And they're being very transparent with us that there is a very strong sentiment lingering in Canada among Canadian consumers that they don't want to see American product on the shelves. They're not happy. Our friends in the wine industry have really been hit hard. Canada is the number one export market for California wine. And so, you know, the opportunity here to renew USMCA with some improvements, we think can get us back to close to where we were before, especially with Canada.
Yeah, and let's talk a bit more about Mexico. We covered the north, let's go to the south. But, you know, Congressman Austin Scott led a letter about specialty crop dumping to U.S. Trade Representative Jamison Greer. But, you know, could there potentially be stronger seasonal trade protections put in? Or, you know, if they were, what would that really mean for the growers here in the U.S.?
Yeah, he raised that yesterday with me. We had a fun back and forth in the committee hearing. And I understand the point very, very well. I am very, very close to my colleague in Florida, Mike Joyner, and I know a lot of his members. He knows a lot of mine. So we know each other's circumstances quite well. As I said to Congressman Scott yesterday, the growers in the Southeast have made a pretty compelling case. But it goes to the reality, the fact that there are existing avenues for dispute resolution or to make a case that don't require the most extreme, for example, imposition of tariffs. We in the special crop industry, with over 300 different products that fit the category, have a very wide range of scenarios that we have to deal with in our trading relationships. Not only by commodity, not only by product, tomatoes are different than grapes, are different than watermelons, but also regional distinctions. And again, the Southeast growers have a different reality that I fully understand than a lot of West Coast producers. And so I think the point of all of this is that the existing mechanism, Section 301 investigations, countervailing duty investigations, they're not the easiest cases to make, but they are fact specific, they're evidentiary in nature, and they're durable because they have laid down a record, an evidence record that justifies a tariff. I think that is where we would suggest producers across the special crop industry keep our eyes on the ball. Where you have a good case to make, make it. And that is exactly what those laws are in existence for.
We'll be back with more newsmakers, but first, Andrew Honecke looks at U.S. New World Screwworm case detections in this week's Map It Out.
The number of confirmed New World Screwworm cases in the U.S. continues to grow. This map shows the confirmed NWS cases in the U.S., the total number of cases in each Mexican state, and current port of entry closures. There have been confirmed cases of New World screwworm in Texas and New Mexico. Federal and state officials are working to contain these cases by using sterile flies, but it doesn't appear that enough flies are being produced. According to USDA, about 500 million sterile screwworm flies were dropped weekly to contain past outbreaks. The department is bringing in 100 million flies from Panama and expects an additional 100 million by the end of the year. Ag Secretary Brooke Rollins says another 300 million flies will be available once a new sterile fly facility in Texas comes online next fall. For AgriPulse, I'm Andrew Honecke.
I've worked at Coca-Cola for 21 years.
We're delivering Dr. Pepper from our brand new facility in Dallas, Texas.
We're really proud to still make Pepsi products in America.
You don't need a college degree to work here, but I put four kids through college by working here.
This is a great place to work with great people and great American brands.
Grocery stores, convenience stores, restaurants, they all depend on us.
We deliver great paying jobs.
We deliver beverages people love.
We deliver for our community.
For 35 years, soybean farmers have invested together to build demand for U.S. soy at home and around the world. Through the Soy Checkoff, farmers turn every dollar into stronger markets for U.S. soybeans, driving innovation and partnerships across feed, food, fuel, sustainable production, and beyond. Led by farmers and built to last. U.S. Soy, 35 years of delivering value back to the farm and investing in the future of agriculture.
Welcome back. Seven cases of New World screwworm have now been detected in the U.S. Texas A&M Entomology Department Head Philip Kaufman and Ron Phillips, the Senior Vice President of Policy at the Animal Health Institute, join us for our panel discussion this week. To begin, Philip, why is it so concerning that cases of New World screwworm have now been detected on U.S. soil?
Thank you very much for addressing this important issue. As we currently stand, there have been seven identifications of New World screwworm on animals in the United States. Six of those have been in Texas, isolated to four counties, and one was in a dog in southeastern New Mexico. Five of the infestations in Texas have been in cattle, and one was in a goat. All of these isolations were reported by ranchers, and we are grateful to the ranchers for stepping forward and letting us know that they have these infestations, because what that's allowed us to do is to respond appropriately and quickly to try and suppress these populations. What happens when a rancher tells us that they have screwworm, those flies are immediately sent to the laboratory in Kerrville, Texas, where they are identified by experts. Once an identification is confirmed, Texas Animal Health Commission, along with Texas Parks and Wildlife Department, which are the two state agencies that Governor Abbott assigned for the state response, will move into position in those areas. They draw essentially a 20 kilometer circle or a 12 and a half mile circle around the infested zone, and they call it an infestation zone, although you may hear it called a quarantine. Quarantine is a legal term that Animal Health Commission uses in order for them to have certain authorities to do things such as animal movement restrictions and inspections. Ranchers are fully able to have their animals inspected, treated, and move them out of the quarantine or the infestation zones. They just have to follow the procedures that are in place. We have been working closely for the last 18 months at the federal, state, and agency level in cooperation with our Texas livestock producers and wildlife groups in order to come up with these plans that we are now implementing. We are extremely well prepared, and we have been preparing for what we are dealing with in South Texas right now. So what happens in an infestation zone is all of the properties are identified. Texas Animal Health Commission personnel visit each property to assess whether there are animals on there and what type of animals they have. They will offer to help with the inspections should they be needed, and then they move forward in partnership with the producer or the rancher in order to make sure that the animals are protected and are safe. I did visit with the initial rancher who had the first case, and he has expressed that this process has been very smooth, and he said that the calf is actually recovering quite well and was sharing pictures with me.
Yeah, and USDA partners have been very focused on increasing that capacity of sterile flies. I mean, Philip, do you think that there are enough sterile flies right now, but we're just not quite at that level that we had when this was eradicated before? So are there enough sterile flies, and what more needs to be done?
So we currently have enough sterile flies to do the responses that we're doing, and our effort is really to keep these to as few as possible so that we maintain the flies that we have at an effective level. We don't have enough flies to re-eradicate the pest the way we did in the 1960s, but help is on the way. There are opening plants in Mexico, and in the future, there'll be a plant open in Edinburgh, Texas, which will collectively produce enough flies for us to re-eradicate this pest. But it's going to take us a bit of time, and that's why we need to make sure that we try and keep the number of infested zones and ranches at a minimum and try and exterminate those infestations as we're made aware of them.
And Ron, your members are the animal health companies that are producing, manufacturing, distributing all these vaccines and different treatment options. But, you know, what's available right now, and what's that innovation look like on the company side to bring those to the producers and the folks that need them?
Yeah, you know, I want to start same place Philip did in talking about the preparedness that's gone into this, because, last year, Secretary Kennedy of HHS made a emergency health designation that opened up new authorities for FDA Center for Veterinary Medicine to come and work with our member companies on using some expedited authorities to bring some of these prevention and treatment options to market. So the good news is that since just August of last year, as of this morning, with the newest one being announced, there have been a total of 13 products approved by FDA for both the prevention and the treatment of this disease. 10 of those are under what's called the Emergency Use Authority that was made possible by Secretary Kennedy's designation. So that really allows FDA a lot more flexibility in working with companies who were invited to bring in information that they had perhaps on products that just needed a new label, or products that were approved somewhere else and could be approved here in the U.S. It's been a real success story in terms of the way that industry and government have come together to expeditiously make these treatments available.
We'll be back with more newsmakers right after this.
I've worked at Coca-Cola for 21 years.
We're delivering Dr. Pepper for my branded facility in Dallas, Texas.
We're really proud to still make Pepsi products in America.
You don't need a college degree to work here, but I put 4 kids through college by working here.
This is a great place to work with great people and great American brands.
Grocery stores, convenience stores, restaurants, they all depend on us.
We deliver great paying jobs.
We deliver beverages people love.
We deliver for our community.
America never stops. Thanks to the financial support of Farm Credit, neither do the farmers and ranchers who call her home. Since the beginning, we've been helping rural America show the world what hard work can achieve. But the job is far from over. And as rural America grows further, we'll be there.
Welcome back. During the warm summer months, the life cycle for New World screwworm is shorter. I asked Texas A&M Entomology Department head Philip Kaufman if he's concerned about wildlife spreading the pest.
We are in a much better position this time with screwworm than we were the last. We have some wonderful products that are very effective. Some of them can be effective for weeks. We didn't have that the last time we had screwworm. But wildlife is a game changer this time, because the last time we had screwworm, the screwworm had already suppressed the wildlife in South Texas. And we have considerably more wildlife, a lot more white-tailed deer. Feral swine are very much a problem in large numbers in South Texas. And these animals act as amplification hosts, right? They're producing a lot of screwworms that then the sterile male program has to suppress. And so it is a bit different, right? We have fewer cattle in South Texas than we did in the past, which can be beneficial for not producing more sterile flies, but part of treatment of cattle and other hosts is allowing us to suppress the overall production of the flies as well. So wildlife are our most difficult challenge, because you can't catch them and treat them in most cases.
And Ron, as we wrap up here, you know, what do you see as different? You mentioned the testament of the animal health companies, all the innovation of those products. But, you know, how are we more prepared now than when we saw screwworm in the 1960s? And what additional authorities could the state or federal government have to better respond to this as we look to the future?
I would simply commend the preparation that's taken place, both on the part of USDA and FDA. You know, in our world, you know, FDA has really push the envelope in using the authorities available to them. Some of those can be expanded. You know, part of the reason we were able to, FDA was able to do this emergency use authority, was because the actual emergency could be tied to human health because of the zoonotic nature of this. In the future, if we have an animal outbreak, you know, we need to expand that authority so that these designations can be used for an animal disease only outbreak, but that doesn't really address this situation. The only other point that I would make here is that, as Philip has kind of underscored here, vigilance is necessary. I mean, some of the products that have been approved are labeled for wildlife. It's a difficult, as he's mentioned, a difficult area to talk about, but it's important to recognize that these treatment tools are just one tool that's available and a broader response is being made.
We'll be back with more newsmakers, but first, Andrew Honecke looks at slowed capital expenditures and this week's Ag by the Numbers.
Farmers have been dealing with poor economic conditions for 3 consecutive years, and as farm income has decreased, farmland values and equipment sales have also gone down. This chart shows values for farm income, farmland, and equipment sales from 2010 to 2025. Farm income has gone down since the start of 2023. Farm equipment sales have also fallen significantly. Farmland values have not taken as bad of a hit, mainly due to the fact that they are not influenced solely by farm income. For AgriPulse, I'm Andrew Honecke.
For 35 years, soybean farmers have invested together to build demand for U.S. soy at home and around the world. Through the Soy Checkoff, farmers turn every dollar into stronger markets for U.S. soybeans, driving innovation and partnerships across feed, food, fuel, sustainable production, and beyond, led by farmers and built to last. U.S. Soy, 35 years of delivering value back to the farm and investing in the future of agriculture.
I was kind of known as the sheep guy around here. The fire went from north to south and it blew that way and it went straight down the house. Lost all of our sheep literally a week before we were to start lambing. And I was really in a bad place. I happened to notice this farm state of mind piece of paper. And I picked up my cell phone and I made a phone call, and that was the best phone call in my life. I'm glad that I'm still here. So don't do something permanent over a temporary situation.
Thanks for joining us for another episode of AgriPulse Newsmakers. The House is in recess next week, and the Senate will be in session until the Juneteenth holiday on Friday. The USDA's Crop Progress Report will be released on Monday. For AgriPulse, I'm Lydia Johnson. Thanks for watching.
Newsmakers is a production of AgriPulse Communications. You can also find our new content on YouTube and wherever you get your podcasts. And don't forget to follow AgriPulse and our correspondents on social media to get breaking news and more. For agriculture, trade, food, environment, and regulatory news, your source is AgriPulse.com.